future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, it is Wednesday, October 6, 2021. Yes, we are into October. Welcome to the newest edition of Raging Chicken's collection of podcasts. It's the Wednesday show with Cyril Michalako. Cyril is a progressive columnist for the Bucks County Courier-Times and the Intelligencer. And this show joins Out to Coop Live, our Monday evening interview show, and our Friday politics roundup in which Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. You can get all our shows by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And a couple of quick show notes. If you tried to tune into my interview with Jordan Hopkins and Out to Coop Live this past Monday, well, you know that Jordan was unable to make it unexpectedly right before then. But good news, everything's good, he's okay. Right? That was my concerns expressing on the air on Monday. But we're going to reschedule that interview for Monday, October 18th. We'll be talking about his latest article for Unicorn Riot, School Board Disruptions Escalate, funded by conservative dark money. And this coming Monday, October 11th at 7 p.m., I welcome Jamie Davis and Cindy Shane to the program. Davis and Shane are school board candidates at the Palisades School District, in which they're having its own battles against right-wing extremist toxicity. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, you know, got to make sure that, you know, once you're done with this show, or, you know, why not do it right now while we're all in the warm-up? You can head on over and check out Cyril's newsletter on Substack. You can go to cyrilmichalako.substack.com, or you can click on the note of the link in today's show notes. I got to get my, like, mouth around my words today, apparently. And you can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just head on over to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Your support has helped make today's show possible. You can also help out the show by heading on over to our YouTube channel if you're not there already. And smash that subscribe button. Hit the like for this show, the stream for this show. Oh my God, what is my problem today? And hit that notification bell so you'll know every time that we go live. You can also join our Discord server to continue the conversation all week long. Info on that is also in today's show notes. And a special shout out goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at @songadayman. That's @songadayman with two N's. That's @songadayman on Twitter. On this week's show, yes, we're going to dig into Cyril's latest column, The Bucks County Youth Must Uprise. What is my problem? Must rise up, uprise. Listen to me. Bucks County youth must rise up to defend education. In that column, Cyril interviewed Edhad Gupta, a Central York High School activist who helped lead organizing efforts to overturn a ban on a list of books confronting racism written by people of color. Cyril sees lessons in those students' organizing efforts for battles being fought right here in Bucks County and across the Commonwealth. And we'll also take a peek at what's happening in his newsletter and what he's got cooking for his next column. So, man, good morning, Cyril, man. It's good to see you.
Hey, good morning. Good to see you, too.
Hey, I got to say this before we kind of jump into the heart of the show. I see that that you've been getting some hiking in lately, which I'm totally psyched to see.
Yes. You know, here in Guatemala, the rainy season's finally ending, and we've just been getting some beautiful weather and, you know, just trying to get back into mountain goat mode, so to speak.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, good to see you. I'm glad to see you getting out, man. I just, I'm waiting for the weather here to break so I can maybe get out and hit some mountains of my own these days. So, you know, look, I mean, we've had, as you know, as I know, as anybody listening to the show knows, the school boards and what is happening in school districts kind of throughout the Commonwealth seems to be setting the tone for the kind of battles that we're seeing both in electoral and non-electoral politics right now, but real major battles happening over education. And then you dug into this once again, looking at what happened over in the Central York School District. So give us a little kind of window into kind of what's going on and what you wrote about in your latest column.
Sure. So What I saw happening in Central York was something that was really inspiring. And what it was a student-led, essentially a revolt, right? Peaceful, protesting.
Right.
Student organizing and student mobilizing and student action with community support to push back against a racist book and resource ban that was targeting voices of color in both literature and history, from elementary school all the way through high school. And what we saw happen with these students' actions is that it generated the type of both national and actually international, The Guardian wrote about
right. What
was happening there, attention, which I think was really instrumental in the rollback of this ban, right? Because I think it's insane, right? Like there was a book about Pele that was on the banned list, and
Cyril, I don't know if you know this, but Pele was black, so. Right? I mean, seriously, that's the level we're talking about here.
And that's the thing, and for me, obviously, there's lessons to draw from that, because I think people are under the mistaken assumption that you can use common sense and reason to reach these far right school boards,
right,
like in Penridge, and just have a discussion with them, and then all of a sudden they'll be like, you know what, you're right. Like, we are racist. That's why we're banning these books. That's not going to happen, right? So you need to you need to organize, and you need to be prepared to just step up the pressure, because we're seeing Penridge take that same approach, and it's part of a national campaign, this national far right white lash, if you will, against history. That's looking to completely whitewash resources and education that's available to students.
Well, yeah, and I think that what I love about what you did in this column too, as well, is that you start with the words of Edha Gupta herself, right, and basically saying, look, if we don't stand up for decisions directly affecting us, who's going to? Right. And, and part of what we saw there is, as you said, with these organizing efforts, those students had a better understanding of both what's at stake and what is necessary to fight back than I think a lot of other folks have had in other contexts. Matter of fact, I was just talking to a colleague member of mine this morning, and she and I were talking about how, what we often see the progressive or the left or that is that, don't have an understanding. Really what's at stake here is power, right? And then rationality and reason. Yes, obviously we always have to make our arguments, but the folks that are trying to whitewash history, right, are playing for keeps, right? And they're playing the power game. And so we have to organize and up the stakes and bring the pressure in ways exactly what they did. And it wasn't like they just one day decided to go jump out of bed and go have a protest, but they had been organizing and working on this for almost a year, it seems.
No, absolutely. And one of the positive things from that I think will be its legacy, the students' legacy in Central York, is that they're creating a culture, right, within
right.
the student body, a culture of, students that are engaged, not only just in their education, but in, democracy and the type of, society and country and world we're trying to build. I'm just hoping that students and parents obviously are paying attention to this story and the ramifications and the lessons that they can learn from it. Like you were saying, it's amazing. This high school senior seems to have so much more wisdom, right, and just a basic understanding of history than people on school boards or parents that you're hearing speaking on school boards. One of the
right.
things I did with you know, to kind of complement the column is just on my newsletter. I published the, you know, the full interview notes that I had with her, because I felt that, like, you know, she was just so insightful and so inspiring. And then, you know, there's so many lessons that all of us could learn from, you know, from what she was saying. But, you know, like, you know, one thing that kind of like stuck out to me was, or, you know, a lot of it did, but one thing was, like, she said that, like, if incorporating resources from the unfiltered and genuine history of America fosters hate in students, that should be remedied, and those students should not be sheltered. And that's just, like, specifically, like, critiquing one of the main arguments that the far right parents, the far right school board candidates or school board members are saying, is, like, somehow, like, teaching, like, a critical history, you know, or, you know, amplifying and showcasing, like, voices that were adversely affected by U.S. Actions in the past is going to generate hate. No, it's going to generate understanding. But, like, you know, I've been thinking about this, and, like, I think, like, one of the reasons why we're seeing such a, you know, a backlash and white lash against this is because, like, the story of progress in the United States of America is the story of progressives, right, organizing throughout history and pushing against, back always, against the far right, right? So, like, you know, I was talking about how, like, even when, you know, when we're teaching the dark chapters, you know, there's a light shining through those pages. Well, that light is coming from progressive people and entities, the abolitionists, the farm workers, the American Indian movement, the anti-war movement, environmentalists, etc. Like, the history of progress in the United States is the history of the left and progressives pushing back against the far right to bring us into the next century.
100%. You know, in one of the classes that I teach you right now, we just read a couple chapters from Heather McGee's book, The Sum of Us. You know, was basically looking at some of the structures of racism have played itself in the U.S. history. And there's this remarkable moment in there where she's talking about some of the history in, like, you know, it was before the American Revolution, the late 1600s, 1680, that in the Virginia, right, there was an uprising of black and white sharecroppers and slaves, right? And they basically rose up against the plantation class and burnt the city, like the capital of Richmond, to the ground, right? Because a refusal to kind of abide by this kind of oppressive and exploitative system. And, you know, again, for most of my students in my classes, and, you know, certainly for, you know, I remember when I first read about that kind of several years ago, but coming across as, why the heck was I never taught this, right? And then if you also look all throughout history, you have these moments of resistance where it shows us a different story or a different narrative that is equally empowering. Right. It's just a question, is that are we ultimately going to only validate the history of the kind of, like, you know, those who the rulers, basically those who are doing the exploitation, or actually are we going to kind of, like, share a little truth with history that's going to show us, like, what's been the driving force of any kind of forward momentum in this kind of, like, you know, democratic experiment, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sadly, this has been going on for a long time. It just seems like now there's just a huge uptick, and the right has kind of, like, identified this as, you know, this whole, like, anti-critical race theory hysteria, and this kind of, like, you know, this anti-education campaign is something that's kind of going to galvanize the, you know, the base, not just for this election, but I think they're looking forward to next year. But, you know, right. You know, like you were saying, and, you know, even, you know, there was an interesting interview with, like, George Will. You know, I disagree with, like, most of his stuff, but he's a sharp dude. And he had to admit that, like, you know, him not learning, like, not knowing about, like, Tulsa, right, until this year, until his 80th year, you know, he called it a pogrom. Right. And we're seeing that right now. This is a pogrom that's being unleashed by the right. That's trying to keep these stories so other people can be kept in the dark. And then one of the things that does is just, like, when students who grow into adults don't have a basic grasp of U.S. history, it's easily it makes it easier, you know, for the Republican Party to kind of like manipulate them and like push through like some of these like, you know, voter suppression laws, right? Because they're not getting the connection exactly. between like now and like, you know, Jim Crow.
Exactly. 100%. You know, and like, and we see, you talk about I'm trying to be calm right here. Because it gets it's really amazing what's going on. And when you quoted George Will in that piece, I was like, this is exactly right. And you know what's really fascinating to me is that, you know, there was a group of these conservatives at one point in time, like they were like, you know, shouting from the rooftops about how we're coddling kids, right? And we're making the kids like, you know, unable to kind of critically engage in something like this. And now, like the same faction of people are basically saying, no, we need to coddle our kids. We need to coddle our kids and protect them from, like, you know, any kind of sense that there's something bad out there. It's really bonkers about how quickly these folks can shift on a dime and just for whatever is going to serve, you know, serve their political ends, which we should say are the same ends. They're always the same ends. Right. Is that it's white supremacy. Right. It's a domination by the few. It's kind of a patriarchal white supremacist culture. Right. And again, that doesn't mean that that's everything that America is. That's, of course, not the case. Right. The whole point is that we need to deal with the complexity of any country's history or any world history if we are going to basically have, you know, approach the future with any kind of, you know, clear headedness, if you will.
No, absolutely. And I mean, if you just like, and if you, you know, of course, going back to Penridge, right? If you look at this like far right organization, this so-called Penridge for Educational Liberty, you know, their members, one, you know, I'll give them this. They're organized because someone's writing these scripts for these parents, right?
Right.
But if you're listening, it's like all the same tone, all the same verbiage. One guy apparently didn't like, you know, think to like read over it a few times. So if like you're listening to him, like the cadence of, you know, him reading this script is just completely like jilted and he's like mispronouncing words that he's probably never used before. And, you know, they're calling out like Frederick Douglass, right? Like Langston Hughes. I mean, and
remarkable.
And this is the new normal in Bucks County with the Republican Party.
Right. And like, you know, I don't know if you had a chance to see this or not, but this was just posted. There's a great website. It's a Penridge School Board Watch. They just posted a letter, a mailer that has been going around now that's being promoted by, you know, these far right candidates are coming out. Let me read just a kind of a clip of this this mailer that came out. It says, perhaps never before have local school board races been so important to the future of America. Over the last 3 years, Penridge School District rankings have dropped and now parents' eyes have been opened to the divisive teachings of critical race theory. A child is defined by their race and they are an oppressor if white and a victim if black or brown. And radical gender theory. Children can be boys, girls, neither or both. As part of the diversity, equity, and inclusion DEI initiatives in public schools funded with their tax dollars. On the surface, they sounded like good concepts, ones that you'd even support. But when you look closer, rather than teach children to focus on the content of one's character, they teach them to focus on race and question their gender identity and view America as the problem rather than a force for good in the world. And we were the first and only candidates who sounded the alarm against these divisive teachings. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that they're like selling. And it's astonishing.
Really. Yeah, no, I mean, it's the politics of fear. And, you know, like I kind of mentioned in one of my previous columns, you know, it's neo-McCarthyism, right? And that's what they want you to believe. And, you know, it shouldn't come as a surprise that like the John, what do you call it?
Birch Society?
Yeah, we're recruiting outside of a Penridge school board meeting. Like the John right. Birch Society is recruiting right-wing Penridge parents, handing out, you know, anti-public, you know, public education literature. So, yeah, this is where we're at, you know, in the upper box.
Yeah, well, you know, like cockroaches are tough to get rid of. They keep on coming back. You know, what can you say? Oh, man. So it's crazy. I mean, I don't know. I get more excited and more nervous as we move closer to November 2nd, which of course is election day, and which of course these school board races are going to be ultimately be decided. And, you know, I got to give a lot of a shout out to the folks over at Pennridge United who have been doing kind of bang up work and knocking on doors and heading out, and you know, trying to get the word out and trying to kind of push back against these kind of this right wing extremism. And what's remarkable, so we'll see. So I get excited about it. And then I also get really nervous about it because if you've got not just in the Pennridge School District, but also in the Palisades School District, Central Bucks School District, all throughout Bucks County and beyond, that we could have some real problems going forward if these right wing extremists are elected. So.
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's just like this toxic cocktail of like QAnon, conspiracy theorists, militias and bigots and, you know, all throughout Bucks. And, you know, in Pennridge, it's just like you already have a far right kind of school board led by Joan Collin. And now with these new school board candidates, they're even pushing farther to the right. And if they're allowed to get, you know, if they're elected, they're just going to consolidate power. They're going to push their agenda. They're going to see it as, you know, as just a green light for them to kind of push through their whole just kind of far right toxic wish list. And I don't know. It's going to be very difficult to roll that back in the future.
100%. And ironically, they say that you're like, yes, we've seen school board, like the Pennridge School District rankings fall, and they've fallen as a direct result of what Joan Collin and these far right both people have done. And for them to turn that around is, you know, again, it tells you what they're willing to do and what the lies that they're willing to tell in order to get elected. But yeah, we shall see. So let me. So what are you working on these days? Where are you going next with your column and newsletter?
Okay. So, you know, first with the newsletter, one of the things I'm kind of like trying to focus on is, you know, November, right? The election, because it's huge. So, you know, I'll be kind of showcasing the Republican Party's like rogues gallery of far right candidates that they have on the ballot. I started with Cora Landis last week, who is from Palisades, who is just, you know, just completely way far out of the mainstream. You know, whether it's like her QAnon, her bigotry, etc. This week, I just sent it out before we went live for this show, and I'm showcasing Central Bucks School District's Deborah Cannon, who has been endorsed by the 3% militia cell in Bucks County, the Proud American Patriots Network. Obviously, like her other far-right colleagues who are running for school board, has embraced this because they've all refused to repudiate or disavow this endorsement. And, you know, again, like she's just out there, right? She's talking about like evil, yeah, demonic parents. You know, I can't imagine that like voters would want someone like that kind of influencing and setting, you know, school policy and educational curriculum. It's dangerous. And so that's what I'm going to be doing each week, up until the election, you know, in addition to just kind of like the, you know, the regular edition of the newsletter. As far as the column goes, I spoke with this professor a while back, and I was planning on publishing something a little while ago, but kind of like other things kind of like pushed it back. So it looks like this week I'm going to kind of be like critiquing, like, you know, why is it that like Republicans and Democrats kind of like live in kind of like two different worlds, right? Like two different realities. And like, why is it that the right, if you listen to these school board meetings, you'll hear this, whether it's about like parents, like talking about like an 1860 Supreme Court ruling that supposedly, you know, banned social distancing, which took me like 10 seconds to like fact check, or whether it is a prediction of a polio outbreak in November. I mean, why is it that the right is having a hard time kind of living in an evidenced and fact-based reality? And part of the problem is it's because, you know, they have their own very tight, very small kind of like media, you know, ecosphere or circles, right? and a lot of it is within social media. And what you're seeing is that, like, all it is just like these outlets or these personalities or these, you know, Facebook memes where apparently, like, right, people get their news from. They're just kind of like repeating and reinforcing the same either mis or disinformation that they're putting out. So I'm going to kind of like dig into that a bit, based on my interview with her and her book, because I think it speaks a lot to, you know, what we're up against come November 2nd for the election.
Well, I think that's 100% right. And I know that Fiona Hill just came out with a book that just dropped, I guess, today. And if you remember, she was one of the kind of star witnesses and kind of the impeachment. And this is one of the things that she points to, too, as well, about the ways that that's corrupted our democracy. It really puts democracy kind of in peril. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we also saw this week where Facebook basically was taken down, right? You know, I'm still convinced it was taken down by hackers. Some people are saying otherwise, but, and that's after, you know, they were exposed and a whistleblower went on 60 Minutes to basically lay out Facebook's role in all of this. But, you know, and I don't want to like minimize any of that stuff that happens in social media, but I think the important piece is kind of what you just pointed to, is that there is a pre-existing kind of media ecosphere, like, you know, ecosystem that's basically built on creating a kind of self-referential system, right? So that, you know, I remember back in, you know, in 2010, 2011, we saw the rise of the Tea Party movement, that we saw the kind of the uprisings in, you know, obviously Occupy, but also in Wisconsin. And the when they first were exposing the Koch network, right? And you had kind of Media Matters was kind of putting out all sorts of investigative stuff, looking at ALEC, looking at the American Legislative Exchange Council. And one of the things you're able to see is that, you know, there would be this think tank, like, say, the Cato Institute, for example, which would cite research, right, in their materials. And that research was being produced by the Heritage Foundation. Right. And the Heritage Foundation was funding these scholars that happened to teach at these range of different universities. And so that you'd have then people from those three institutions who are all getting money from the same people would then go on Fox News, for example, as experts in the field. Right. And so even if any one of those pieces of research, quote unquote, right, was simply nothing more than propaganda, right, it was being referred to in all these different kind of media spheres. And that makes for a nice little closed system if what you're trying to do is pull the wool over people's eyes, right? So, I mean, the fact that you saw, you talked about these, you know, 1860 or whatever Supreme Court cases that starts getting cited in the Supreme Court or in school board meetings is a perfect example of that, because that's just a little, like, quote unquote factoid, which is not even a factoid at all, right? But that gets circulated out in these stuff. And if you're just sitting there watching, you're consuming this kind of media, that arms you with a quote unquote fact that you could go to a school board meeting and sound like you know what you're talking about, right? And so that is so freaking dangerous. And I do wonder how we get out of this. And I really don't know the answer to that at this point.
I don't know either. And it's scary because, like you said, it's like it's a threat to democracy. And seeing like so many people kind of like duped by this, you know, it starts to shake your faith in democracy and whether it's going to, you know, continue to functionally, you know, exist in this country and if not elsewhere.
Oh, boy. Well, I guess that means that we got our work cut out for us in this little corner of the state.
Yeah. On that corner.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. On that downer. Hey, you know, here we go. Happy October, everybody. Well, listen, Cyril, man, it's always great talking to you. I'm glad we're able to kind of get this working. We having some folks, we were kind of having some issues on some tech issues kind of the past couple of weeks, just so you know, plus kind of redoing our schedules with me back to school and so on like this. But hopefully we get this continues to run, because the work that Cyril is doing right now, especially, I'm telling you, definitely check out his newsletter. I think that's going to be one of the biggest services people could do, and share out that material so you get to see the profiles of these extremist candidates that are out there, that, and we need to kind of mobilize and defeat when it come November 2nd. So, you know, Cyril, as always, thank you so much for the work, and we'll see you again next week.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
All right, got it. All right, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thank you for tuning in once again to Raging Chicken. The Wednesday Show with Cyril Mikulenko. We'll be back on Friday to doing our Friday News Roundup. That's with Sean Kitchen. And join us back on Monday, October 11th, on Out to Coop Live when we're talking to Palisades School Board candidates. Let's do it. See ya! I'll fly.